Hello, everybody. Welcome to another episode of Fireside Chicago. I am your host, Tim Shum. I am also the founder and president of Lucas James Talent Partners, our lead recruiting firm here in town. Today, we have a fantastic guest. I am honored to have on the show. I've known him for the past 4 or 5 years. Really looking forward to catching up with him. Casey Clark, co-founder and CEO of Cultivate Advisors. Cultivate offers a tailored one-on-one advising service to small business owners all across North America. Based in Chicago, they provide hundreds of resources to the small business owners that they serve, as well as create a one-of-a-kind community to facilitate prosperous growth for all of their small business clients. Ladies and gentlemen, Casey Clark. How's it going, Casey?
I'm doing well. Thanks, Tim. That was probably the most elaborate write-up I've ever had somebody share for me.
I was, you know, trying to give it the energy that it required because okay. I am excited to have you on the show today.
Fair enough. I appreciate it.
I know you're a busy dude, and thanks for carving out the time. How's everything going in Casey's world today?
I'm doing great, actually. I'm doing well. I woke up to find out that our nanny called in sick today. So like everybody's, you know, scrambling. I've had a really consistent experience. This is actually my first day of having a COVID issue where I have to make sure I step out for meetings and help support my wife in certain areas. So that's the only thing negative going on in my world today. But besides that, everything's fantastic.
I think we're all, you know, used to what's going on with COVID and, you know, kids coming in the background. So, okay, disclaimer.
If you hear my son screaming, we understand what's going on.
He's got a little one. Congratulations on the new addition to the family.
Yeah, thanks, Tim. I appreciate it.
Absolutely.
That.
So let's kind of jump in. For the folks that don't know Casey Clark or Cultivate Advisors, what is Cultivate Advisors for the listeners?
Yeah, I mean, in short, look, we teach business owners how to become CEOs. We work with these business owners. We develop, we find the advisor that's perfect for them. The advisor works for anywhere from 6 to 8 hours a month for that business with that owner to help them grow and scale the business, both on the business, outside of the business, but more importantly, even to help, you know, really create implementation and growth within the business. So we even work with key leaders, depending on the size of businesses. So we work with the owners in 140 plus different industries. We're industry agnostic. And we've got owners that come from all walks of life that have their MBA, they've ran multiple businesses before, from first-time business owners who are just getting started. So we've got this really cool community. Everybody gets on our online platform, is having an ongoing conversation, but they get this tailored one-on-one conversation with an advisor along the way.
So your son is about to go to school the next few years. He's going to have a teacher. You know, he's going to play sports, right? I would imagine he'll have a coach of some sort.
Some kind, at some point.
We have professors in college, and then we kind of get out into the real world, and then we have mentors if we join a company. But in entrepreneurship, you're kind of on your own, and I can speak to that. I'm 2 years into my own business.
Yep.
And, you know, I've always valued having mentorship in some form or fashion, but, you know, maybe speak to the, you know, the need for a coach for some of the clients that you serve that are just starting a business or even maybe 5 or 10 years into their journey.
Yeah, I mean, I think there's a lot of different types of mentors, right? There's tons of coaches out there that can help you on very specific industry things. I think the value of a coach, though, is actually having somebody that's helping you hold yourself accountable and also helping you pull away all the flack that's not important at that time to actually focus on the root priorities. And I think that's where actually people really struggle is they don't understand how to use data in the business. They don't understand, you know, necessarily if they haven't been there before, what to look for or what's coming. And that proactivity can be what makes or breaks an organization, which is why we found the advisor role is what creates that mentorship. And Tim, I've had, you know, it sounds like you've had some sports coaches probably to yourself. Like I've had some awesome coaches in my career that have created a lot of success from, you know, teachers to, you know, sports coaches to even paying for coaches when I ran my first franchising business. At the end of the day, anybody who thinks they can lead this thing, lead a business 100% on their own, they've never tried it. With somebody in help. And I'm not even pitching us. I'm actually just saying, get a mentor, get somebody you work with, get a board, whatever your approach is, no problem. There's a bunch of options out there. I think we're a pretty cool option to take a look at. But at the end of the day, it resonates wholly of like, you can't see your blind spots. If you could, they wouldn't be called blind spots.
I think, you know, there's a lot of people out there that look at entrepreneurship maybe as a goal one day. For some, I think it's like, a way out of their current situation, maybe. Okay. Like, hey, I don't want a boss. I think, and then some people are just, you know, born to do it. Maybe it's like in their family blood or something, whatever the reason that they're looking to get into it.
Yeah.
I think often, and I can speak to this myself, often you kind of like underappreciate you got to kind of know like a lot about sales, a lot about marketing. You have to, like, your role changes in the business day to day, week to week, month to month, year to year. Finance, if you don't have like a financial bone in your body, that's going to hurt you. You know, when you're working with a small business owner, how do you kind of identify maybe what those blind spots are and then what that, you know, prescriptive approach is for that individual person?
Yeah, you know, there's a couple different ways to look at this. Here's what I tell you. Most owners, they don't realize what stage of the business they're in, and they don't understand that what they look at and what they lead as a business owner is different depending on the stage of the organization. Meaning if you're a solopreneur, what you should focus on is very different once you have a team. Once you have a team, it's very different what you're focused on for the next level of growth. And owners, there's a reason why majority of owners get stuck at the same exact spots. They get stuck to scale with talent. Then they get stuck at how to lead executive teams. Then they get stuck on how to grow through capital and acquisitions. And if you see it, it's how they get stuck every time. And some people burst through, but most people don't. So the way that we figured out a way to kind of analyze, can I actually share my screen to show a quick, simple little model? Tim, do you mind?
Sure. Let me
pick it up. It looks like I have availability to do it.
You do. Go for it.
I think it'll really help people just see our kind of our methodology of how we look at it. So we call this our propeller. Can you see this on the screen?
I can see it.
Awesome. It's very, very simple, not overcomplicated, but you think about this idea that this financial engine is what runs the business. And what you said, it's so hard for business owners. They don't have a financial background. They don't know how to build a perform out for the next 3 or 4 years and create all the scalable widgets within to understand how much their cash threshold should be and how to structure this. You know, most business owners think, I have a bookkeeper, I have a CPA, I understand finance. Like, no, you understand historic financials. You don't understand how to operationally lead current financials and understand future financials. That's where we see a big blind spot. Once we get the financial engine built, we're then looking at the growth side. We're making sure there's enough sales, the pipeline, the conversion, the structure is set up properly. We're making sure the marketing initiatives, the amount of leads coming through the right source and the right cost of acquisition is flowing properly. Once you have the sales in check, then we move over to the capacity side, which is going to be leadership and recruiting. Who do you have in your leadership team? Who's on your bench? Do you have enough sustainability set up to be able to promote and continue the scale? Are you in place to have the right development plans? Do you understand what your attrition rate is? Do you know how to shrink that attrition rate of people? Now we go to recruiting. How many people do you need? I know you know a lot about this, Tim. You spend a lot of time here, right? How many people do you need? Why do you need those people? How do you structure the roles? How do you set them up for accountability to be successful? And then this whole thing is encased by productivity. And that's what makes up the engine, because you have to be productive. Everybody in your organization has to be moving in the same direction with the same amount of productivity levels in order to create growth. And so how we slow this down is we do a deep dive analysis to understand each of these. And our simple example is this. If you have a business and you're trying to take flight and you've got this propeller as your engine, you better believe if you've got like, you know, 3 out of 10 built out of sales and 6 out of 10 on marketing, maybe 2 out of 10 on leadership, 1 out of 10 recruiting, that's going to be a bumpy, bumpy ride, very turbulent. And you could crash and burn. And this is why companies crash and burn, because it's about slowly building out these blades slowly as you get bigger and bigger and bigger at the right speed. So it's a very smooth engine. And this is the methodology of how we run the business and how we take a deep dive into companies and find this starts to get people to think about their business a little differently when they look through this lens.
I love this. This is a very simple way of describing the controlled chaos, or really chaos in a lot of people's lives, especially this year, which we'll get to, I'm sure, later in the conversation.
Oh, yeah.
Where do you, you know, obviously if they're buying your services, if they're looking for a coach, I think that's a step in the right direction. That's probably a small subset of people. And I think a lot of the, like, the business owners out there that are struggling clearly need some help. Where do you see some of the areas in, whether it's sales, marketing, recruiting, leadership, productivity in general, why business owners ultimately fail and what they could be doing maybe to get out of that rut?
You know, failure of business owners are it's so interesting, because this is my opinion. I don't have any, I'm not going to quote some third party of like, this is the reality, but this is what I see when I look at it. There's more technology that's accessible to small business owners than ever before. There's more financial and capital being infused into small business owners than ever before. I mean, just think even just of like the Cabbage, although some of these are just not good programs to build a business off of, but you can get access to capital more than you ever could have 10 years, even 10 years ago. I mean, it is just shocking. Yet, why is the failure rate the same, if not even worse, mm-hmm. with all those elements in play? So my true opinion, just if I come up the helicopter with you a little bit and look at a more holistic view, I think there's three components. You need your systems, your technology to help run the business. You need the people in the business, right? How good are you at really leading and driving people? But there's also, you need to actually build your skill. Most business owners are on the job training. I mean, look, I have an entrepreneurship degree from University of Illinois. I got to tell you right now, I didn't learn how to run a business by getting an entrepreneurship degree from University of Illinois. Hopefully you don't watch this, but that did not happen. In fact, it didn't prepare me at all for what I was walking into to be a business owner. I learned some skills, but I didn't learn how to run a business. And I think most people, if they're watching, or if they're a business owner, they're probably shaking their head going, yeah, you're not going to get it there. So how do you get in front and learn these skills of being smart enough before you can afford that CMO to come in and help take over marketing for you? You've got to be smart enough to build up maybe a $5, $6 million engine on, you know, marketing sources and marketing attribution and figuring out how you're going to set up partnerships and how you're going to structure and build it all systematized, allowing you to then scale on that lever. So what I find is it's actually just a skill issue of advisors or clients, I'm sorry, for us and the business owners we meet. Let's say they have two or three of those propellers blades I showed. They kind of got them. They're naturally talented. Maybe they've done it in a corporate role or maybe they've done it in their past. They kind of know enough. And so they start the business with enough comfortability. I rarely see a business owner start a business that don't have any of these somewhat figured out. The problem is that they don't know the other ones and they think they can just figure them out. The problem is it's so slow and it's so costly and so expensive. Ultimately, it creates the failure of the business. Versus with an advisor, a coach, again, not even have to be us, but our approach is we understand those pain points and then we assign the advisor who their strengths are the areas that the owner's is not. That way they become partners. So again, like if my biggest advice for people wanting to find a coach or an advisor to get away from the failure of these reasons I'm sharing, whatever you do, don't find the same person of who you are. Right. Find your complete opposite who's really skilled at the things you're not skilled at. And that's for us, we don't lead the business owner on everything. We just go after the one or two areas that we can really help them with because that's where their pain points are.
I think the biggest thing for me, a lot of the listeners and the attendees know a lot about my story. I'm 2 years in. Yep. 2020 was a whirlwind every year. I have a sales and sales leadership background. I think my blind spot was probably the financial piece. I could put you know, spreadsheets together. I understand personal finances and 401ks and stuff. But when you get into a business, it's really hard to kind of wrap your head around if you don't have a background or experience in this around, okay, I charge X, you know, I provide services based on one timeline. I have AR that's sitting out there. There's got to be cash in the business. Yeah. Oh, why do you get a credit line? How do you use the credit card? Like this is all foreign to me. And even if you're frugal and your personal situation is tight in a business context, depending on what your goals are, that was a whole new world for me. I had to get a fractional CFO involved to really understand that. Best money I spent, frankly. Whether it's, and that was my blind spot to your point.
Yeah.
And I think like for other people, it's sales, or for other people, it's marketing. For other people, you know, it's management and they need to outsource that by maybe hiring somebody for that. And I think there's so many different things that need to be going right for a business to be successful that I think you're spot on in the way that you have it set up and the way that you're working with your clients for sure.
Tim, what's different about what you just shared though, too, is that as an advisor or a coach, again, whoever you want to look to kind of look at these blind spots, a good advisor coach isn't the one that's actually going to provide like the recruiting service like you will, Tim. Like it's not going to provide, you know, some of the great, you know, things I've seen. Like I see Ben Goldberg here on the call today. Like they'll provide on the sales side. Ben's actually, he's actually a vendor of ours. We use him. He helps us grow our business. So, you know, it's like when we look at those different elements of the business, an advisor, a coach, what's really nice is they're neutral. They're there to go, actually, let's find you the best vendor to help you solve this. And so just keep in mind, like that advisor coach isn't necessarily the person who has to come in and actually maneuver that for the owner. A lot of times it's actually identifying it, putting together a plan, understanding how much to spend and why, and doing a lot of that research for you to be able to find that right vendor to help support you. So you're right though. Everybody has their stick. Everybody has their root weakness that they struggle with, but how to get this whole thing to spin at rapid pace and really take flight to scale. That's what we figured out to become experts at.
I'm a podcast junkie. I love biographies, autobiographies. I think what really kind of pumps me up as an entrepreneur is learning about someone else's story and how they got there. That's maybe 5 years, 10 years, 20 years, my senior, everybody from like a Warren Buffett or Mark Zuckerberg down to, you know, the 26-year-old tech entrepreneur that sold the company for, and there's so many different ways to kind of cut success.
Sure.
What I've heard, what a pattern is that your role when you start the business, everyone gives them the CEO title or gives themselves the president title. I'm no different. Yeah. But what I need to provide at a certain stage of the business, especially at the beginning, is drastically different as you scale. So when I started, I was the bookkeeper. Right. I was depositing checks.
You
I was
had a salesperson.
I had all the hats, right? And now we have 30 people on the team. I'm a player coach on the sales side, and I have someone managing the recruiters. And I think as we continue to scale, my skill set's going to need to change. How do you kind of categorize the different stages that a business owner is at, and the services that, you know, a one man or one woman shop needs is a lot different than someone that's leading 100 people?
Yeah. Well, I'll tell you what, this will be my one shameless plug. If you go to cultivateadvisors.com, you'll actually be able to see the five stages. There's even a quiz you can go through to see what stage you're in. What we've done, Tim, is we took your question actually, because that was the biggest thing we were trying to figure out on how we could scale our company to be able to teach all of our advisors who are past business owners how to lead this. So that's how we got to this. We surveyed all of our clients. We started looking at where the pain points were, what was consistent. We realized there was five key stages that locked out, starting with the hustler, who's the solopreneur. This is just like you said, you do everything. And the reason why we call it the hustler is because the only way out of that stage is to hustle. It doesn't matter. I don't care how smart you are. I don't care how much money you have. If you do not hustle and create some type of traction, you will not go to the next step. The next stage for us is the experimenter. This is the next time that org chart changes. You're starting to bring on your first few employees. You're really testing out the market. Right now, you're still in that mode of saying yes to everybody. Can you do this? Yes. Can you do this? Yes. You'll even explore every door opening. Oh, you want to give me money? Of course I'll explore it. You're in that experimentation phase of also, who do you want to work with? You recruit a couple people. Most owners, when they recruit their first 3 to 5 employees, do not stick with them past the first year because they realize they hired the wrong people. They realize it's not the right set. So it's all about experimentation. And you know you're going to get out of that experimenter stage once you finally are more confident to say no, 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 no. When you find yourself saying no more than you're saying yes, you realize you're starting to graduate out of that stage for scale because you're really getting into your personas. You're understanding your widget clearly in terms of your output of either product or service. And you set yourself up to actually create a scalable business. That leads you now to the visionary stage. And obviously, based on the terms, what are you doing? You're now starting to draft your vision. You're starting to create, where do you want to go? You're recruiting talent based on the vision, not the current opportunity anymore. You're selling the dream. You're going and hiring better talent, higher quality talent for the purpose of bringing in leadership roles in the future. Usually you start to bring in a little bit of management levels to help you oversee the business. My gut would say, Tim, this is about where you're at based on what I've heard in terms of some of the episodes I've seen. Once you're through that visionary phase and you've now started to figure out your org structure, how you're going to scale it with people, you start to invest in your sales and marketing to help drive the fuel the growth. You're not just the bootstrapping, which a lot of people do in the first early days. You're now moving over to what I call the systemizer stage. That systemizer stage is now where you're going to start to incorporate an executive team. You're focused on taking, we'll call it, your generalist employees that you've hired to this point to get the business off the ground because you need everybody to do so many things. And you're now going to start to isolate in your org chart and really systemize out very specialty roles and put executives in position where you start to lose control of the organization. You're now depending on your executives to run the company. This is the hardest thing I see owners deal with. And what they do in this systemization is they're also starting to build out the technology and the guardrails that allow you to really scale human capital or scale, you know, number of clients coming into the organization, depending, or consumers, depending if you're B2B, B2C. Once you're past the systemization phase, you're now what we call an influencer. No, I'm not talking about the influencers on social media. I'm talking about your leadership has just completely changed as an influencer. You now have trained, developed executive staff that run the company. You don't run it. This is potentially you could be an absentee owner even. But your objective here is you're trying to influence their vision. You're trying to influence their direction. And that's why you see private equity companies or these larger companies, they say, I want a $10 million or $20 million business with, you know, $2, $3 million EBITDA before I buy. That's why, you know, 85% of the exits happen after that point. They want you to get to where if the owner gets hit by a bus, the business will still keep going. And that's, you have to work to get to that influencer. So most people come to us, they're super excited to work all the way up to that influencer. One of our first responses to people, Tim, is actually not everybody's meant to become an influencer. And some people will be thrilled and happy. And so know what stage you're at, because every time you jump a stage, it is extremely expensive and you're going to see a massive dip in profit when you make the shift.
Sounds fun.
You have to know how far
to go. And encouraging at the same time.
Before right? you keep going. So that's how we break it down. And obviously we have thousands, like I can't even walk through how much we have around this content and how we put it into our methodology. But that's how we view the stages. We see it keeps working over and over again in terms of where people get stuck.
I also think there's like a skill set for managing a 5-person team when you're still like in the hunt for the business, you're still being scrappy versus 50 people versus 500 people. And I think, you know, in a lot of these stories that I read, these autobiographies, these podcasts of people talking about their history.
Yeah.
They either step aside and have someone else do it. And that's the move.
Yeah.
Because they are impeding success and impeding growth in the business.
Sure.
Or they have to learn a different skill set, which, you know, there might be some sacrificial lambs in the team through vendors along the way to kind of get to that stage. What's your view on that piece, working with clients for as long as you have?
I mean, you're talking about entrepreneurial DNA is what I feel like you're talking about. It's like, what's the DNA of that entrepreneur and how do they have to grow the business with that DNA? So like, if you look at like Jason Vandenboom, CEO, you know, founder of ActiveCampaign, I had a chance to interview him at our annual conference last year. He walked us through his journey in front of our client community. We do a lot of those types of things. And, you know, his perspective was, you know, he was more of the introverted guy. Like he wanted to be behind the computer. He wanted to build the product. He wanted to watch and read every net promoter score and survey that came through. That's how he built the company. He spent a lot of money on really great leadership to come in and do the work for him. That was his DNA. So I, you know, there's a lot of hero consultants out there that shout their names and like run the business like me, come through my consortium and we'll come out the other side, a different person. You know, we don't buy in any of that crap. Like we think like you've got your DNA and you've got to get a tailored approach of how to scale your business for you through these stages. And you got to know where to invest outside of your blind spots to help the business run and grow so you can really create and build a sustainable, you know, company. So I don't know how far you want to go on the DNA side, but I mean, that's our opinion is that everybody has an entrepreneurial DNA.
I think we can stop there, but you're spot on. I loved how you articulated that. It's about self-awareness, I think is the first thing. And you need to know what stage that you're in to your first point. Which stage you want to get to, because that'll change what you do today. And then how was your role within that? And then what are the moves within that? Do you need to skill up or do you need to, you know, get a co-founder? Do you need to hire a manager? There's a lot of different things that go into that.
It's chicken or the egg, right? Like if you think about it, you need so much ego to survive the hustler and experimenter stage of getting out off the ground. And then as you grow the business, you need to lose your ego really quick.
I think, you know, it's, you and I, you know, we know a lot of business owners around town, outside of town. You know, there's something to be said around just having a long-term mindset, I'm not going to lose mindset. And I run into folks all the time that are 5 years, 10 years, 20 years into their business, and they don't have something like huge that's in Forbes or Fast Company or Inc. magazine. But they stuck with it. They learned somewhere along the way. They found something that works for them, their niche. They were experimenting maybe for a lot longer than you would advise to in their businesses. And then you run across, you know, really, really sharp and smart people that, you know, maybe there's a misalignment with their partners and, you know, that runs them into trouble. Or they're in a blind spot where their ego overtakes what their blind spot is. There's so many variables to be successful as a business owner. And I think, what you guys are doing is spot on to make sure that you're driving people in the right direction. Let's talk about your specific growth. We met 5 years ago, I think 4 years ago, 2016, I left corporate America. You and your partner were, I think maybe 3 years into Cultivate.
We would have been part-time for 2 years at that point.
1 year full time. That's right.
Yeah.
And you know, you had a small team back then, but now like
four of us maybe.
There's four of you.
Yeah.
Now you have folks in Canada, folks in multiple cities across the U.S.
Yep.
Maybe 50 or so total employees. You have some accolades, Inc. 5000 list, top 800 each of the last 2 years, and continuing to grow.
Yeah.
Maybe speak to your own story a little bit and maybe kind of tie in as a leader, what stage that you are at and how you almost take your own advice to scale your own company.
Yeah, no, happy to. We talk a lot in the company about tactful honesty and we talk a lot in our company about the level of introspection we have. And One of the ways that we've created success is everybody on our team, we're so focused on what is their level of introspection and can we always improve? So when you get nothing but business owners, just imagine my world, Tim, like when you imagine my space, I have nothing but business owners who work for me. They've all ran businesses prior. They're all entrepreneurs. And somehow we've created an opportunity that had enough incentive for them to come in and say, I want to help lead other business owners on how to do this after succeeding in their own business. And we have advisors who have exited 20 million plus other businesses. We have advisors on our team that have, you know, exited 2 million. We have advisors who have ran several businesses, were worth a ton of money and lost it all, right? Mm-hmm. So all over the market in terms of who's in our space, all different industries, the amount of learning I get from all of our team members, it's addicting. That was my trick. I'm going to go figure out how to bring high talent and somehow figure out a structure of the comp that allowed me to do that, to bring in these killer people that then can teach me how to run and create in these different markets that they're really skilled at. So for me personally, the stage that I'm in, you know, I've got the executive team for the most part built out. I probably have another 2 years in this system. The systemizer is the longest stage. I've probably got another 2 years to where I'll really say like, okay, all the executive roles are filled. Like I'm still the CFO of the business, right? I'm still taking on all the legal implications of the business, but I have an operations team. But I lead those operators. I don't have a COO running, you know, the sales, marketing, and operations of the business yet. I'm still kind of in that space. So for me, that's where I'm at in my stage. But I've been here before, to be fair, right? My background before was in franchising. I was a successful franchise owner, got tapped on the shoulder to become a GM and lead business owners on how to start their own franchise. Then from there, became a VP to lead GM. So I started teaching coaches how to coach business owners. I mean, I was doing that at age 24. So I was early to the game of entrepreneurship with my first business. You know, a lot of entrepreneurs can talk about this, right? Like lawn care company, payroll, you know, paper routes, like, you know, just that whole world kind of set me up to put myself in a position to then go back and recreate this. But what's so neat is we're learning just as much from our clients as they learn from us. But our promise is that this is a random fact. There's about 300,000 small business coaches. If you look on LinkedIn, 300,000. Very few have scaled. Why? I don't know that answer because I'm not them. But what I do know is that for us, we've always said the only way we'll scale our company is if we help these businesses scale. So what are we most proud about in terms of our journey? We're proud about actually all of our clients that continue to grow by massive percentages year over year in revenue and profit. And we know as long as that happens, attrition will last as long as it needs to with us. We'll be able to continue to grow, because our number one lead source every year is client referrals. Even at our scaled model this year, our biggest lead source is client referral clients. You got to have an engine, but you also got to be really good at what you do. I guess that's what I'm trying to tell you. And so we spend all of our time just trying to be the best we can. So that's awesome. Where my journey is. That's where I'm like trying to figure out now is like, how do I slowly step away and let them keep driving? Because anymore, sometimes I just feel like I'm in the way.
It's cool to watch. You know, we've known each other for 4.5 years now. It's cool to see what you've been able to build. I'm sure this is, you know, we're catching you at least on this recording at chapter 5 of a 20 chapter, you know, kind of journey. So looking forward to see what you do in the future. It brings up another point. I have a corporate background. I worked for a multi-billion dollar company. It was in management and sales management. And, you know, now starting this business, I have less blind spots, I feel like.
Sure,
there's still a lot of blind spots. You ran a successful franchising business prior to this.
Yep.
Others, you know, start their businesses in the dorm room and all that other stuff. What's your take on what you do prior and your maybe ability to succeed or your self-awareness around what those blind spots are and what you need to maybe kind of catch up on before you succeed in your business?
I may have a different opinion than most people on this. I'm not sure. I haven't had this conversation for a little bit, but my perspective of this is I actually think you should jump into running your own business as fast as you possibly can. When I look at the stories of people who try to play to go through like working for a competitor or go, you know, work for a corporation first, I'm talking about people, Tim, that know they want to be a business owner, obviously. Mm-hmm. If you don't know, you don't know, right? If you haven't come to that conclusion, I get it. Mm-hmm. But when I see, I've had this really unique chance to look at franchise owners that come in, you know, after they've had a corporate experience and buy their first franchise. I had an experience leading a college-based franchise system, people just coming out of college and starting their own business right out of the gates. I feel like I have this really unique experience of all these business owners I get to see and all the numbers and the journey. Zero difference, in my opinion. It's all about when did they start the journey? How soon did they start the journey? Because if you weren't getting that corporate experience, you probably could have got leadership experience on steroids 10 times faster by just hiring your first employee. Because it was all on you. And you would have understood why the rules, what they were, why the box was what it was, you know, at whatever, you know, place you worked. Because you'd learn the hard way. you'd learn from picking yourself back up every day. And you're like, oh, screwed that up. Oh, screwed that up. So my perspective is people wanting to run a business or people that are in that space, I really believe jump as fast as you can, because the faster you can start to get the experience, the better. And as far as like, what do you have to catch up on? Again, like, do you have a good product or service? Do you have a way to market and sell it on the growth side? Do you have ability to attract talent and lead that talent, right? And then does it all make sense financially? Like, and I don't care who you are, I could take that model and put that on any business. And I can quickly break it out and go, these are all the issues. Until you fix it, you'll never hit the objective you're sharing with me.
I also think, you know, going back to personal finance, 401k, time value of money, compound interest.
Sure.
If you know that concept of think long-term, year over year, 5% growth is something big down the road. 20% sure. growth is something exponentially bigger.
Sure.
To your point, I often think about, hey, what if I started my business 5 years prior? Regardless of, you're going to have some tough years. The first
matter what,
it's going to suck. You're going to learn some stuff. You have to stay mentally and, you know, emotionally very, very, very level. And there's books written on this, and you have a lot of resources for this. But if you started earlier and stuck with it, think about where I would have been. So I love your thought of just get into it, just kind of jump into it. And I think a lot of people really, really want to be an entrepreneur and are still kind of sitting on the fence and are letting years and years and years and years go by.
I agree. And the thing that I see, the longer they wait, the harder it is to make the grind and get through those first two stages. Because what you're saying, when you talk about how it's always hard for everyone, again, we have this really unique experience working with all of our clients. The people that get to this, you know, visionary stage and above, they're able to ride this curve much more shallow in our meetings. Our hustlers and experimenters, they're like this, all of them. They're all just, you know, and why? Because they're on an island. They're a solopreneur. They're the people that are thinking like, I got to change my website. Like, no one's seen your website. Like, you're tired of it because you spent so much time on it. No one else has seen your website. Like, you're so new getting on. Your website doesn't matter right now. You're on the wrong things. And so I think what happens is these, I'll call it earlier journey entrepreneurs, they're in that first couple stages. They're alone. They don't have a team to lean on. They don't have the higher talent developed to leverage and delegate. That's taxing. That just sucks the life out of you when stuff just comes storming down on you, especially with what happened in 2020. So my point is, I don't care how prepared you are, you're going to go through it. And if you get a bunch of capital behind you and you're lucky enough to get a VC and you decide to go that route so you can have a good financial life while building the business versus bootstrapping it, I find it's still the exact same thing, because all you're doing is worried about giving your investors all the money back, and you're just even more freaked out. At least if this way, if you fail, it's just on you versus you're letting down this. I mean, I'm just saying, like, it doesn't get any easier. Everybody's like, I got all this money. I'm like, you might be able to go faster through the stages, but you're still going to ride the curve even faster because it's actually more stakes on the line.
You're spot on. You got to get that scalable model in place. Let's talk about COVID a little bit. 2020.
Sure.
I feel like especially for the small business sector, we've had an 8-9 year bull run. It's really never been like less cost prohibitive to become an entrepreneur. There's a lot of resources out there, the internet, there's a lot of internet entrepreneurs. Like, there's a lot of people kind of coming into the entrepreneurial space. There's a lot of confidence out in the marketplace.
Sure.
And then COVID happens, and depending on what industry you're in.
Yeah. Either you're excited or you're out.
Yeah. You're either out, impacted surviving, to a certain degree. Yeah. And then, there's a small percentage that are just getting like massive tailwinds from this and good for them.
Yep.
Maybe talk about the last 6 months. You know, you're working with your clients on this. I would imagine there's a lot of fear and uncertainty, and they probably needed to lean on an advisor more than ever, I would imagine.
Well, I can tell you this, and this is a good opportunity just because I don't get a chance to do this as much as I'd like. Like, I've got to give a big shout out to all of our advisors. It has been a taxing year. To perspective, my advisor is on Zoom, in a Zoom live meeting, 7 hours a day minimum. and they are hearing nothing but problems from a business owner all day, every day, and trying to help them solve it. So we definitely got tested at our skill of being business therapists as much as being business advisors this year. So no doubt that if we feel that, it's obviously real in the market. Here's my perspective on this though. I've talked to a lot of business owners from tourism that completely got wiped overnight to restaurants that are somewhat surviving to professional services that seem to just kind of be trucking along with, you know, lawyers excited about all the legal and litigation coming out, you know, to the industries that you said are, you know, thriving. Even this platform we're on, you know, Zoom, that guy just, you know, he'll never, 25 generations will never work again.
Right.
You know, and so you look at what's happening in this market, and what we've seen is that we have this really fun phrase we used to have pre-COVID, and it was the cool kids know their numbers. Simple phrase, cool kids know their numbers. What we found is that most, and this speaks to your story, Tim, most business owners do not spend enough time on their financials. They spend like an hour here and there. It's more of a pain point for bookkeeping and accounting. They don't actually spend time analyzing their money, their financials, and make it a big part of their business. We force that. So if anybody watching that thinks they want to come work with us, if you don't want to have to go through that, don't work with us. We're going to force you to look at your numbers constantly. And we use that financial engine. And the reason why I bring this up, here's what we experienced. We actually had most of our businesses have more money in the bank than they had ever had prior because we focus on raising cash thresholds for growth. Most business owners, when we meet them, the first thing we look at is cash in the bank. I would say 9 out of 10 owners, they do not charge enough and they do not have enough money in the bank. And we can show math to prove why it'd be luck if you got through all that's going to come at you as you grow your business through the years at the way they're running the business. And so what we found was this, it was really scary. The businesses that had just started with us, they felt it the worst versus the business that had been with us. And at first we thought it was us. We're like, we're amazing. But then we actually realized it was a component of what we had done. We had risen everybody's cash thresholds. We had set them up in a cash position to be able to pivot just fine. Because the only reason why it affected small business owners so badly in most areas is actually because of the amount of cash they had as their threshold when it hit. And no one's preparing for this. I'm not telling you that you had to plan differently for the pandemic. I'm just saying they already weren't even in a good spot on their cash threshold because of how they approached it. So I have a little different lens to that, but that's my perspective. The people who had the cash threshold, even the restaurant owners, we have a lot of restaurant owners that are doing 30% of the volume. They're making the same amount of profit. They figured out how to do it because they knew their numbers and they had the cash reserves to get through that little gap of uncertainty until it opened back up. The ones that just, even travel, I've got travel companies that are shut down. They've got a ton of cash in the bank. They're just waiting for it to come back. And they're building out all the tech and building all the systems. They're growing in a different way. And they're just understanding what that looks like. So that's what our experience has been, actually. Maybe a little more unique than others, but no doubt. I mean, this was crazy. And no, if anybody's like, oh, I should have saw this coming, or I should have planned for this, or no. Like, I would have understood a bull market running for 8 or 9 years. I probably should just pull back a little bit just to make sure my investments, because something could happen, especially it's an election year. But for some folks to drop 60, 70% overnight, you couldn't have imagined a scenario that would have created that. So it's not your fault. Just for those that are listening, their owners, it's not your fault. Just want to make sure I share that.
But part of the reason I love having a mentor or a coach or an advisor is really, like, they're almost kind of like my business therapist. You know, yeah. I find myself almost...
Or partner that you don't have to pay an equity line to.
That's true. Yeah. Almost like the emotional side of entrepreneurship. There's really, really high highs some days. There's really low lows some days. And I think 2020, you know, probably put people in the craziest emotional extremes. Conundrum, yeah. You know, depending on their situation, of course.
Sure.
What have you seen with your advisors on, you know, how to coach people through, you know, some of those emotional challenges, because I think there's definitely some of us that would make decisions based on emotion, which might not be good professionally for the business. And that's a part of entrepreneurship, and you have, you know, lives and jobs at stake. What would you say to that?
Our world is very tangible. So we always want to bring a model. We always want to bring a way to implement something. So let me give you a model of how we view this.
Sure.
You think about this curve that everybody's going through. Here's how we didn't create this. We are indeed this. We Robin duplicated it. It's a great model. It's out there. You can search transition curve. You'll find a bunch of stuff on this, just so you know, for anybody looking into more of this. But when you think about every change, somebody goes through a change and somebody goes through a transition of emotional, what's happening, right? The first top of the line is uninformed optimism. You're uninformed. You're excited. You don't even know why you're excited. You're just all pumped up, right? Everybody, you're laughing because you know that exact feeling,
yep.
Right? And then, you know, you're in this, you all of a sudden turn in this informed pessimism. Like you start to learn more information. You're on your way down, like halfway through, and you're in this pessimistic state all of a sudden, and you're informed though, because you're like, you've just found something out. You're no longer uninformed. You're like, it's going to be harder than I thought, or this is going to suck, or whatever that negative feeling is. Then you get into this like crisis of meaning at the bottom where you're like, do I even want to keep doing this? Is it even worth it? You start saying weird things like, I don't even know why I'm a business owner, you know, and you have those moments. We've all had them if you've ran a business, and you're at the bottom. Then you finally kick out of it and you kind of come up to this hopeful realism. You're back up to the middle where you're like, okay, I think I understand. It's more realistic than I thought. It's not as bad as I thought. I'm a little more level-headed. And then you get to informed optimism, but it's really just uninformed optimism and you're in this dreaded cycle. And so what we do is we actually slow that down and teach that to owners and actually help them start to become very conscious. So when they come into a session with us, we're going, where are you at? Pick your curve. You're here. Okay, great. How do we keep you there? Is that the right spot? Notice you want to be an informed pessimism or hopeful realism. That's a weird thing. People think they need to be pumped up. I actually don't want to work with an entrepreneur who's super pumped up because I'm not getting the real thing. They're not really using data. They may be using all gut at that point. Right? So what we find is that some owners ride the curve like this 5, 6, 10 times a day. What our job is and what we help entrepreneurs understand is you're going to ride the curve no matter what. You're going to feel personally attacked no matter what. Instead, your job is to figure out how to shallow that curve out. And I'm trying to make it as tangible as I can, but in short, we help owners process that and understand that and even how to lead that within their team to be able to navigate their emotional elements and when to make decisions and when not to make decisions. And that's why I think clients love coming to meet with us for 2 hours every 2 weeks, because we're also able to keep them level. Because it's all about just, are you living in the past? Are you living in the present? Are you living in the future? And where's your curve? And if you put those two things together, you can pretty quickly, consciously start to manage how you're feeling and keep at the right pace so you can be as objective as possible. That's all we're trying to be.
Stay in the middle. Yeah, I think there's a lot of folks in 2020 that without a coach or without being able to talk to somebody about this, you know, might be in that at the bottom of that curve for maybe a little bit too long, where, you know, like the rebound is probably right around the corner. It's 1 week out or a month out. They don't even know when that is, but, you know, emotionally they're so down to the dumps of what's happening.
Well, and Tim, you don't even have to have an advisor and coach to do this. I mean, like, yes, there's value. Of course, it's a service we offer. I'd love to promote it, but it's not about that. Like, even if you're an entrepreneur, like I have groups of entrepreneurs I hang out with. Like, go find 4 or 5 other entrepreneurs and ask to get together once a week or every 2 weeks and just talk about how you're feeling. And you're going to be shocked that you're not a silo. Everybody's doing the same stuff. Everybody's got the same fears. Everybody's got the same excitements. And when you're up, they're going to be down. When you're down, they're going to be up. Like, and it's just understand the rules of gambling at the table. That's what you are as an entrepreneur. You're gambling. You're gambling for growth of a business to create, you know, personal wealth or whatever vision of implementation in life or legacy you want to leave behind. So as soon as you can just understand that and that you got to have kind of a group or consensus you can confide in, you start to kind of narrow, you know, like I said, shallow that out. So dead on.
I love it, man. I love it. Every time that we connect, I always take a few nuggets away. I got a lot of nuggets that I'm walking away with today. I know that all the other listeners on the podcast or the live folks on the webinar are getting a lot out of this as well. If someone wanted to reach out to you or learn a little bit more about your company, where can they do that?
Yeah, cultivateadvisors.com. Take the 5-stage quiz. Figure out which stage you're in. That'll give us your contact information. Our offer for everybody, we'll give you 2 free hours with an identified advisor. So you can trial it. See if you like the meeting. See if you like the approach. You choose. If not, no hard feelings. You just get a different perspective on your business. No harm in that.
I love it. Casey, thanks so much for carving out the time for us today. Have a good rest of the week. Take care.
Awesome. Thank you.
Bye-bye.